Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Pennant Wars, our new presenting sponsor for the podcast. If you're an avid fantasy baseball player, you're going to love Pennant Wars. It's an online baseball management game where you call the shots as the GM of your own baseball franchise. Build a team that plays your brand of baseball, draft and develop amateurs, spend big in the free agent market, or make blockbuster trades with other owners. Its in-depth and realistic simulation engine plays out full 162-game seasons, pitch by pitch. And the entire season plays out over the course of just 6 weeks. Best of all, the Pennant Wars universe is always on, meaning you can check in and manage your team from anywhere, at home, on your phone, or, I won't encourage it, but I know it happens, we've all been there, even at work. So there's only a couple months left in the fantasy baseball season, but you can get your fantasy baseball fix year-round with Pennant Wars. As soon as one season ends and a champion is crowned, the next season begins the following day. So head over to PennantWars.com and try it out for free today.
Sanchez is the perfect example of the struggle with prospect fatigue. You know, Sanchez has literally been around forever. I think I don't remember the exact joke that Jeff Parnastro made about it in the Yankees top 10.
Here it is, Brett. Sanchez is approaching 10-5 rights on national prospect lists.
That was it, yeah.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
All right, good evening, and welcome to episode 101, or should I just say episode 101? I don't know. What do you guys
101
think?
Sounds good.
All right. We've never gotten to this point with a fantasy podcast before, I don't think.
I don't think anybody has, no.
It's precedent. We're establishing precedent.
Damn right. I'm glad to be a part of it. All right, good evening, and welcome to episode 101 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by my usual co-hosts, Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella, who are both back from vacation, I'm happy to report. Mike is back from Universal. Brett's back from California. Guys, good to have you back again.
Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. It's I'm actually still off of work at my non BP job, so it's nice to have the break.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy the time off. So with that, I want to let everybody know we're going to be transitioning to an every other week show schedule. So we will not be recording next week. We'll have one the following week. It's just getting to that point in the year where we don't have a ton to talk about every single week, and we're going to start to transition into our off-season mode. So we're going to be going every other week moving forward with recording. So just a quick programming note there. But tonight's show is going to be pretty fun. We're going to talk some expert fab right off the top, and we're going to talk about the final 6 weeks of the season and shifting to a sort of a true category game moving forward, and some strategies for if you're in contention and you have a chance to win your league. We're going to talk about how to maximize that championship run here coming up. So just a little bit of housekeeping here. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And I post a lot of things about Mookie Betts at George Bissell. You can email us, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you listen to the podcast on. So, guys, let's start out with expert fab bidding and labor mixed, where a couple of Yankees were the big bids this week.
Yeah, so, you know, as our regular listeners know, in labor mixed, you can't, or in all labor leagues, you can't speculate on minor leaguers. So, no one took Aaron Judge at the beginning of the year, which on reserve, which I could certainly understand. It wasn't clear if he'd be up or not or what his timetable was. He had spent half a year in AAA, but if the Yankees were contending, which they've done for years, there didn't seem to be a place for him. But the Yankees sold, and they did the wise thing, I think, and promoted Aaron Judge. And I'm not just saying that with the benefit of hindsight. I wrote some pretty positive words about him over the weekend in the call-up before he was promoted. So, yeah, this looks like a pretty solid move. We're getting to the point in the season where we're going to talk less and less about fab just because teams are running out of fab and resources. But, Judge, to me, unless Gurriel gets called up, he looks like the top or one of the top guys that you can potentially bid on from now until the end of the year. Brett, do you agree, disagree?
Yeah, he's really, really fun. He is an enormous man, and he is there's obviously lots of inherent risk that comes with really tall sluggers, since it's not the most reliable profile, but Judge has a little bit smoother of a swing and a little bit better of an approach than some other comparable prospects. I mean, the guy who comes to mind for me when I think of Judge and like comping him to other tall right-handed outfielders is kind of Corey Hart. I think Judge has a little bit more upside if he really taps into it everywhere but speed. I don't think he'll ever be a 20 steal guy like Hart was at the beginning of his career. But it's that sort of profile. I think he's going to. Did Mookie Betts just hit another home run?
He probably did, because that's what Mookie Betts does. Mookie of the year.
Good lord.
If he did just hit another home run, he has more than David Ortiz now, and David Ortiz is going to finish the year with 30 plus home runs. That's crazy.
That is insane.
Yeah,
and he just hit a home run off Brad Brock. My boy, Brad Brock.
That's no small feat.
I have Brock in a home league, too, so that doesn't really make me happy. But Mookie's awesome.
Speaking of power, though, I had the opportunity to actually go interview Aaron Judge, and I wrote a piece for BP on him earlier this year in the summer. And when I met him, he was the tallest human being I've ever seen in person. It was like looking at Rob Gronkowski holding a bat. I mean, he's just a massive human being and excellent athleticism. I mean, he's making plays out in right field, diving for balls, and it's fluid is the thing I can describe it. It's very fluid athleticism and has really tremendous power, and I think the approach at the plate is really solid too. That's something that I talked with him about, and very consistent at bat to at bat, and he doesn't get too up or too down. He's very solid on his process for how he approaches it, and I think Aaron Judge is going to be really good for a long time. So this was a good pickup, and he's a guy where it may be too late to give the advice now, but he's a guy I definitely would have thrown a big number on if you still had the fab left to do it. So you guys, Adam Ottavino, Brett, I know you already grabbed him in another league, correct? But he looks like he's going to be the closer here for the Rockies very soon.
Yeah, he's the closer right now.
Oh, if he isn't already, yeah. Okay. I don't keep up with the Rockies closing situation that close.
Yeah, Estevez blew a couple. Well, it was funny because while I was on vacation, Estevez lost the job, and I was at the Phillies game on Saturday, and I had a moment where I was like, wait a minute, he's not the closer? And my guest, who I'll mention on the show because I know she listens, Glitter Corp, she was like, yeah, that happened while, that happened the last few days. So, yep, he's Ottavino's closing, and if he's healthy, which has always been the issue, he'll be fine.
Well, he's had one true save opportunity, and he struck out the side against the Rangers about four or five days ago. He has not allowed an earned run this year.
He hasn't since 2013, I think, or something like that.
That is a fun fact that lies.
Yeah, use that one at your next social gathering. You'll turn some heads. Gary Sanchez went for $6. He's homered twice tonight as we record this on Tuesday night. I love Gary Sanchez. Just a guy who can kind of hit for power at the catching position is always going to have really excellent fantasy value. So I'm fired up about Gary Sanchez. Either of you guys have a strong opinion about him, or am I the only one in camp Sanchez here?
No, you're not the only one. Yes, Sanchez is the perfect example of the struggle with prospect fatigue. Sanchez has literally been around forever. I think I don't remember the exact joke that Jeff Parnastro made about it in the Yankees top 10 this off season, but it was something along those lines. I think he had been on 6 Yankees top 10s at that point. Something maybe 5, just some ridiculous number. And he just, you know, it's the sort of, it's both the prospect fatigue, the comps that are too easy, not working out ahead of him. He was the next in line of Yankee catching prospects who couldn't really catch but could hit behind Jesus Montero. And, you know, when the guy in front of you who you are the next thing of sucks, then, you know, people aren't going to necessarily be as high on you as they probably should be. But Sanchez is, at this point, he's worked enough on his defense and made enough strides there. It looks like he is going to stick for at least a little bit. And, if he's, honestly, next year, if you're in a keeper league and keep him for next year with McCann still in tow, I mean, McCann may get traded this offseason, but Sanchez could find himself in sort of a catcher, first base, DH sort of rotation, which could get him a whole lot of playing time if he hits. He's a guy who could hit 25 home runs over the course of a full year. I think he's probably more of a 260-ish hitter, but that is a borderline top 5 catcher right now.
Yeah, we've talked about this, but aging curves for catchers are weird, and it oftentimes takes them a lot longer to develop than any other position, so it's not surprising that it's taken Sanchez this long. And I actually went and found the Jeff Paternostro quote from the New York Yankees top 10 this year at BP. Here it is, Brett. Sanchez is approaching 10-5 rights on national prospect lists. But he finally cracked the majors in 2015. So, there's a lot to be excited about with Gary Sanchez. Mike, anything else on Gary Sanchez or anything else in the labor mixed portion of the Fab?
I think Brett covered Sanchez, and I'd say I agree with all that. The one thing I'll add is I'm pretty sure that McCann is going to be gone this offseason, even if the Yankees have to eat a big portion of that contract. It really looks like they want to start over with this team. And, you know, short of Jacoby Ellsbury, who, you know, has a massive contract, they're going to really retool. No, I don't have anything else to add. Tyler Austin is kind of interesting. You know, obviously he doesn't have the same profile as those other two Yankees, but, you know, really bounced back. He had a wrist injury in 2015 that completely knocked him off the charts. I mentioned the column. In a worst case, in a 15-team mix, he can produce as a third corner infielder. I don't want to oversell him, but he's a nice, like, sneaky low-end pickup deep mix.
Yeah, the night I went and watched, I covered Aaron Judge that night, I watched Tyler Austin hit 3 home runs and 3 straight at-bats off Roenis Elias. So I like Tyler Austin. He's interesting to me. He kind of just burst onto the scene this year because of all the injuries, came back into the spotlight. So he's a nice play, in, I think, in a deeper league, especially. Luke Weaver for $1, I like. That one to me is nice. And he was the top bid in Tout NL for $87. So either of you guys have a take on Luke Weaver, or I don't know if you want to talk Alex Reyes now, but
yeah, I am completely out on Luke Weaver. Completely. I want no part of that.
Okay.
I don't think he I don't think he has the I don't think he has the staying power in a major league rotation, at least as anything other than a true back end guy. I think his numbers are artificially inflating his value in the minors, and he doesn't have the breaking ball that he needs to be able to get hitters out by strikeout. I would rather own Alex Reyes the rest of this year than Luke Weaver.
Oh, yeah, I'm not debating.
Even if Alex Reyes never starts a game.
Alex Reyes is just nasty. So, yeah, I would agree with that anyway. But, yeah.
Yeah, I made the point about Weaver, and I'm not as low on Weaver as you are, Brett. But, yeah, he's a matchup guy in deep mixed. He's an NL-only guy. You know, he's fine in that format, obviously, and I could see why he went for the price he did. But, you know, he's not somebody you're looking at like, wow, you know, it's Luke Weaver. He's going to have a big impact on my season. The strikeouts are too low. You know, the whip should be good because he's a control guy. He didn't do it in his first outing, but he typically does. But there's just not a lot to get excited about there. He'll be passable in deeper formats. I wouldn't expect more than that.
Okay, there wasn't a lot else here either for the rest of the NL or on the American League side. So Wade Davis got picked up because he got dropped earlier in the year, but like, yeah. there's not a lot to talk about there.
Do we want to talk about Teoscar Hernandez? I think the one thing I'll say about him is just a broader statement. So in Labor AL, I was kind of fascinated that the highest amount of FAB left, and that's a $100 budget, is 11. And that's Eno Saris. So and it's, you know, it's just like Labor Mixed. There are no $0 bids. So they're really down to the dregs there with the FAB they had left. And I talked to Eno about it online, and he essentially said that. He's like, well, you know, there's not a lot left. There's not a lot of talent. Hold on a sec. One of my kids is yelling. I have to cut off here.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
just
no,
give me a moment.
I'm going to cut in with an anecdote about Tyler Austin.
Yes.
So this is how long Tyler Austin has been hanging around for. When Mike and I both joined BP back in 2013, we went to a Portland Trenton minor league game. We wanted to see Xander Bogaerts. He had just gotten to Double A, and he ended up sitting that game. So we didn't even get to see him. But the best prospect on the Yankees Double A team at the time was Tyler Austin, and he actually had a decent game, but he has just has been all downhill for Austin since then, mostly because of injury. And yeah, the skill set is still there for him to be a pretty good, you know, deep league fantasy hitter. I really do still believe in him as sort of like a 275, you know, 15 to 20 home run hitter. Right. And
I'm back by the way, but you guys can keep talking. Sorry about that. Although hey, Brett's been there.
I have. All right, I'm done anyway. That was my cut-in anecdote.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I get a strong, I mean, Austin's only 25. I get a really strong, like, Corey Dickerson vibe with him. Like, a guy who I don't think is going to hit for a huge average, but can hit, you know, 20 home runs a year if he gets the playing time. So, yeah, I'm with you there on Austin. The skills are there. It's just going to be a matter of whether he stays healthy and what type of role they give him. Because right now he's playing at, like, first base, and I don't know if they have a long-term fit for him there. So we'll see. Mike, your point on the remaining FAB, if you want to wrap that up, or
I asked Eno about it because, you know, Hernandez is toolsy, but not somebody I'm extremely excited about. He just made the point of like, well, there just aren't that many guys in an only, you know, in the AL in particular that he sees, you know, coming through. And, you know, he just kind of decided that Hernandez is more of an upside play than Tyler Austin, who went for $10 fewer in Labor AL, and you know that just makes sense. That's a pretty logical rationale to kind of put your money down there. I think Larry Schechter is winning in Labor AL, and he's not lapping the field, but he has a pretty decent lead. So I don't want to say it's over, but teams there are not really going crazy to, you know, kind of in that race. Brett, I know you're in Tout Wars Mixed. You're still. You're not out of it, but I know you're not as close as you were. Are you in fourth or fifth right now?
Fourth. I think I actually might have snuck up to third today, but I will tell you in just a short second.
Dansby Swanson's coming. That's kind of cool.
Dansby Swanson is coming. I have two more stolen bases today. Another bunch of runs and RBIs. Where did I get a point or two? No, I lost a point. I'm in fourth place.
While you were looking for that, Mookie Betts homered again.
I don't even know if you're being serious or not anymore.
See, that's how good he is.
Yeah, I know you're not being serious because I have the game on in the background. It's a pitching change, and the Orioles are at bat. So that would be impressive even for Mookie.
Yes. Are you guys ready to transition to our next segment? Or
I think we are.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, the only thing I want to throw out there is that I was a little upset that Mike didn't mention my big fab pickup of the week in Tout Mixed.
Edwin Jackson?
No, I once again went to the Martin Perez well.
No.
I just keep going back to the well. He actually pitched really, really well yesterday, which is great. But I can't quit him.
Like a moth to a flame.
Yeah.
Yeah, you love pitchers like that. I do have to say in our labor that we do together, one good thing is that the pitchers we've picked up, and you know, it's mainly Danny Duffy, but we've kind of avoided those guys, and we've picked up some good arms and not you were trying to talk me into Perez, I remember earlier, and I was like, yeah, I'd rather not.
Yeah, I still have our string of text messages. Well, not my string of text messages that night before we picked up Danny Duffy, where we had gone over our list, and then I went through and looked at the pitchers again. I think I texted you at 10 o'clock. I was like, Mike, I really want to bid on Danny Duffy, and then like an hour later, nothing. Like, Mike, I really want to bid on Danny Duffy. And then 11:30, like, Mike, I'm going to bid $3 on Danny Duffy.
I think I was either out or it was one of those rare nights I went to bed early. And when I saw it after midnight, I was like, whatever, you know, it's Danny Duffy. You know, if he doesn't work out, it's $3.
Yeah.
Ironically, I wrote a piece this offseason. It was like my first non-fantasy piece for BP, and it was about how good Danny Duffy was as a reliever. So that's ironic now. But anyway. Let's move into our second segment. We only have 6 weeks left in the fantasy season, so I'll open up the floor to both of you guys, because you actually win expert fantasy leagues and have a wealth of knowledge through your years of experience. And we're going to talk about what Brett likes to call shifting to a true category game over these last couple of weeks. So I guess, Brett, I'll open it up to you to kind of elaborate on basically what that is and how it applies to fantasy owners listening to this podcast.
Yeah, so at this point of the season, once you get into August and September, you know, valuation becomes sort of antiquated, and the game becomes just a sprint to the finish line with all of your category positioning. And you know, it's the time of year where you take a look at what categories you can still gain points in, what categories you can give up things in without hurting yourself. And then, you know, you sort of skew your expectation based on how many, how far out of first you are, how many points you need to make up. You know, if you're in fourth or fifth place and need a bunch of things to go right in order for that to happen, you know, sort of like, you know, it's sort of like where I am right now in Tout. You know, I'm in the position where I am going to take more risks than I would if I were in first place or second place. And likewise, if you're in first place or second place, then you want to sort of balance the protecting of your points versus trying to get more points. You know, we can get into this later because I'll let Mike talk for a little bit. But I think the worst trap that people fall into when they're leading a league in mid-August is they go into protect mode. And you know, it's about as stupid of an idea as going into prevent defense in football. It's the same concept. You don't want to do it, and it's an easy way to lose momentum and give back the gains that you've made over the season. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's pretty much almost everything I would say on the topic. And the example that I think I brought this up, this will be the third year in a row I've brought this up when we've done this topic. I was in a league years ago where going into the last week, I was trying to defend an ERA and WHIP lead. And instead of just going with the pitchers I had and, you know, thinking that it would be okay, I picked up a bunch of relievers, and it didn't even matter who the relievers were. I was like, I just don't want starters. I just want relievers. And it was a long time ago, so I don't remember which it was. I think it was an ERA point at risk because of what I did, and made the league kind of scary, where I should have won by like 3 or 4 points. I won by 1 or 2. So yeah, to your point, Brett, trying to play this prevent defense where you try to avoid trouble is a way to get into trouble. Also, you know, we're what, like 6-7 weeks left. I think it's 7 weeks left, including this week.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to be careful now not to start looking, like you're saying, Brett, at points you can lose. You should really be looking at maintaining where you are and also gaining. And you know, another thing about that, like I kind of look at where we are in labor right now, and our chances are certainly slim to win, but I don't want to give up on that just because I know Fred Zinke last year wasn't that far behind where we are right now, and there's always opportunities. You know, something that happens to a number of teams, you can, and this even happens to the experts, you can tend to fall asleep in a category and think that, oh, things aren't going well, you don't have a chance. We're near the bottom in saves, and I thought we couldn't move up, but I looked at a lot of the teams ahead of us and behind us. Two teams behind us have thrown saves away completely, and some of the teams ahead of us aren't really paying attention. This is a phenomenon in redraft leagues in particular. People will stop playing and stop pushing for a category, and it happens in regular leagues. It happens in expert leagues. You really want to make sure you look at every category and every opportunity that you have to maximize points. You might not win, but you really never know.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. So as far as trading in August, as we get, you know, for those people out there who have not reached their trade deadlines yet, how much math do you do? How deep is the math that you do when you're looking at this, and how tight are the margins you like to play with? So, right now, I have a league I'm in where I am in first place in saves by 10 points, and I have two closers, and it's an 8:31 trade deadline, and I'm sort of balancing where I can get away with ditching those last two closers and maximizing the points I can gain from starters without losing a point in saves. So how much do you get into that minutia, Mike, when you look at situations like this?
Moderately would be the short answer. I try to predict what's going to happen. The one thing I do is I look at it conservatively, and it's not that I don't want to trade, but I don't want to put myself into a position. You know, I know you hate when I bring this up, but our first year in labor, you know, we joked that we kept trying to make Hail Marys, and you know, instead of finishing like eighth or ninth, we finished 14th. That's okay to do in the middle of the season. You don't want to do that late in the season. If you give up too much in one or two trades, what you wind up doing is you wind up pushing, giving yourself a great chance to push your team back with a very small chance to push your team forward. So when I'm looking at the categories, you know, saves are an example. So I will kind of figure out, okay, so if a closer can get you know, 5 to 10 saves the rest of the way, and you know, the number's a little bit higher. Let's say it's 10 to 12 saves. I'll look at that. I'll make a broad estimate of what the best case and the worst case scenario is. I'll compare that with the starter I'm getting back. It's obviously not an exact science because a closer can lose his job. More importantly, and this has happened to me before, and I'm sure it's happened to you guys, the starter you pick up, like let's say it's Kyle Hendricks this year, who's cruising, you know, maybe he puts up a 4 the rest of the way just because, you know, he's a starting pitcher and there's some variability. Maybe the Cubs look at him and are like, all right, we're going to start resting him or skipping starts because we know we're going to the playoffs. That's why the analysis, you know, in your terms, Brett, isn't, you know, extreme. I don't sit there and do rigorous analysis on trades. On the other hand, I don't just want to make a trade for the sake of making a trade for that first reason. I don't want to get in that position where I'm just making moves and, you know, I'm in second or third place, but it feels like I'm shooting for something without any kind of plan at all.
I mean, as far as trading goes, and this applies directly to what you guys are talking about, we get a ton of bat signal questions. So whenever I see all these offers that have like 5 players listed from each side, you know, I always think of something that I read once that Bill Belichick said. He said, you know, when you're building a team, you can't try and fix all of your weaknesses at once. And I think that's even more important this late in a season. If you're going to make a deal, I mean, focus on one specific area instead of making a small impact over a few categories. For example, if I'm looking to add power, I want to go get just one specific power bat if I can do that, one that I know is going to impact me in that category, as opposed to getting 3 or 4 different players that might make a slight difference that aren't as good overall. So that's kind of how I approach it, whereas I'm not looking for small marginal upgrades where I'm giving something up to get a couple players who might make an impact in steals and strikeouts and power. I'm looking for one specific, you know, guy who I know is going to do that. That's kind of how I approach it this late in the season.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, it's either the player or the category. Mm-hmm. So, to use an example from last year in Tout Wars, I was strong in starting. I had Kershaw, I had Syndergaard. I was looking to trade a starter for a closer or 2 closers, and anyone but Kershaw was on the table. And I traded Noah Syndergaard for 3 closers. And some of that was looking at where I was, and you know, I was safe in ERA, I was safe in WHIP. I had a point or two to lose in wins and about 4 or 5 to gain in saves. And just based on how wins are variable, I made that decision like, well, if the worst case, I'm going to lose 2 points in wins, and I know those points are there to gain in saves, that's a pretty decent jump for me to make. And, you know, it worked out really well. Now, it's very difficult to get 3 closers in a trade sometimes, you know, obviously. But that's an example of what you're talking about, George, where I was like, well,
yeah,
you know, if it's just 1 closer, even if it's an elite closer like Kenley Jansen, it's a fair trade in May, perhaps, when everything's aligned equally. At the end of the year, that's not a fair trade. And it goes back to what you're saying, Brett, all the way at the beginning of this conversation. You have to really stop looking at value and start looking at what you can gain. And for my trading partner, it was the same thing. He was way up in saves with those 3 closers. So for him to get Syndergaard and potentially jump up in 3 categories with him, that made all the sense in the world.
Yeah, that's a good addition to what I was talking about, because I agree. Yeah. Categories as well. If you're just going to focus on one category, that's exactly right. So, Brett, you kind of said something earlier about you know, not going into protect mode. So how do you find that balance where you're still making moves and at the same time you're not going overboard and making too many moves where it screws things up? How do you find that sort of balance? Because I think that's the question we're all searching for the answer to at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't, it's kind of easy and almost lazy to give the sort of pornography answer here, but you know it when you see it, right? I mean, if you look at a trade and you feel like you're about to potentially do something stupid, then, you know, we've all been playing this game probably for long enough that our gut tells us different things along the way. And, you know, there are some trades that you'll get into with owners that are easy, you know, of a league where you have a ton of saves and you can flip a closer for a really good, you know, middle infielder, someone who can cover over a dead spot for you. That's a easy win-win trade. Those happen, but they don't come around that often, and they usually come together really, really quickly. The trades that are more difficult are the ones where you really have to balance what you're giving up, because what you're giving up is not something that you either can easily replace, or it is something that you can actually lose points if things go south. So it's, you know, I agree with Mike that there's really only so much math you can do, because partially because there's only so much time in the world, but also because you're dealing with such small samples in the last 6-7 weeks of a season that, you know, you could do all the math in the world and feel great about everything and trade for, I don't know, Corey Kluber to get a really strong ace down the stretch, and Corey Kluber could put up a 5 ERA through the end of the season. That would not be super weird. It's just one of those things that happens. I mean, I was having a trade discussion with someone in one of my leagues this week, and they were talking about we were talking about swapping offensive players in a deal, and his concern was that he didn't want to lose too much ground in batting average, and the difference between the two players we were talking about trading were, for this season, about 15 points in batting average. Historically, it's a little bit higher. I would think, you know, from a projection standpoint, it's probably more like 20 to 25 points. But I mean, my reaction was, it just doesn't matter. You take a 260 hitter, any 260 hitter could hit 300 over the course of a month, and any 300 hitter could hit 240 over the course of a month. You can try to put yourself in the best position possible, but when you get into this part of the season, you can really hurt yourself by overthinking things.
I would, in general, you know, unless you're getting, you know, and he's hurt right now, you know, so I won't say Clayton Kershaw, you know, unless you're getting a Madison Bumgarner type, don't trade for ratios. And, you know, the same with batting average. You know, unless you're getting a Jose Altuve, don't trade for batting average. And as you're saying, Brett, even if you do, it still just might not go your way, because that's exactly right. It's things start to get kind of random and wonky. And that particularly happens with those categories, with the qualitative categories. You know, another kind of old example I made years ago, I made a trade where I was looking for runs batted in, and like everyday production, I traded a guy who, you know, it was like a middle infield trade. I won't even mention players because it's an old example, but it was, you know, home runs and steals essentially for a lot of like runs batted in. And the guy I got, who, you know, was kind of a 290, 300 hitter, he hit 350 the rest of the way over like the last like 6 to 8 weeks. And the guy I traded hit like 240. And I wound up picking up an average point that I never in a million years thought I would pick up. So that's the kind of stuff that happens that you really shouldn't be aiming for, that could happen, where, you know, those are categories I'm just not into trading for. You know, like I said, unless there's someone who's such a sure thing, you know, there are no sure things, but even if that player doesn't work out, you're like, well, I traded for the best of the best in the category, it didn't work out, you know, oh well.
How do you view, you talked about how if you're not in first or second place and you have to take more risks, I mean, do you tend to skew more towards guys who have, I guess, huge upside in terms of they could go on a run over a short period of time? Like the example I'm thinking of is a guy like Billy Hamilton right now, who over the last month since the All-Star break, I mean, batting average is, you know, variable, but he is hitting .321. In his last 28 games, he's stolen 29 bases. Are you looking to trade for someone like that who there's, you know, great volatility in the type of return you could get? But if it all comes together and Hamilton steals, I don't know, 35 bases over the final 6 weeks here, that you could really make up some ground if you need steals or something like that? Or are you looking for something more stable? Because I kind of like that you know, if I don't have a shot to win and I'm not in first place, I'd like to go with the guy who has just a huge potential there.
I would always trade for Billy Hamilton.
Well, you know, he's Billy Ball. He's awesome.
To go a step further, you know, I might even, depending on the trade in a deeper league, take a chance on Keon Broxton for that reason. And, you know, this is where, Brett, to get back to your point about how much, you know, analysis you do, I don't want to be too rigorous with the analysis, but you do want to put yourself in a position where you're not overemphasizing small sample sizes, but you're also looking at what's going on. And Broxton's just an example of somebody who, you know, I do this and write about this on a regular basis, and I'm paying way more attention than the typical person who's in a casual league, who's already looking at fantasy football. I didn't realize how hot Broxton had been like the last 5 or 6 weeks. It doesn't mean it'll continue, but it does mean that he'll play and has the chance to do that, as opposed to somebody who's been, you know, just stealing like, you know, 2 or 3 bases or 4 bases a month over the course of a season. So yeah, to your point, George, those are the kind of little angles I'm looking for. I'm looking for players like that who might be able to make that impact. So if I'm 4th or 5th or 6th, and you know, I'm playing for like a money slot in a home league or a better draft position or whatever the rule is, those are the kind of guys I'm looking for. And I'm looking for a trading partner who, like I said, you know, might not be paying quite as much attention, which those people definitely exist.
Yeah, because if it doesn't work out, I mean, you weren't in the money already, so it's not the end of the world. So yeah. I'd rather go with the guy who, you know, could have an amazing month or so.
Well, and really, I mentioned Broxton over Hamilton because, you know, I'd rather have Hamilton, but
he's easier to get.
everybody knows, you know, about Billy Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know, I suspect that there are some owners in, you know, 12 or 14 team mixed leagues who don't even know who Broxton is. I mean, it's a bad example because he's out there in the free agent pool. But even in an NL only, you might be able to get a Broxton in a trade just because somebody's looking at his overall numbers and thinking, oh, you know, he's okay. He doesn't really do that much. I'd be willing to trade, you know, a power hitter who isn't an elite power hitter, or a guy who's like a 12 to 15 home run guy for him. Those are the kind of moves I'm looking to make. The analogy I remember hearing in a good league, you're not going to be able to swap your king for a 3, but you might be able to swap your jack for an 8 or a 9. Like those are the kind of trades that I'm looking to make right now.
Yep. Brett, you have anything else or?
No, not really. I think
this was good.
I like that. I like that talk. That was good. It was a good talk.
We always do well in these freeform talks. We should definitely. I mean, I like talking about Fab, but we should definitely do more of these.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to do this pretty much throughout the offseason too. Just kind of expound on different topics and ideas, because we've had a lot of fun with these in the past. So yeah, we're gonna keep doing this. So if you're listening to this and you have an idea or a suggestion for a specific topic or an idea you have that you want us to talk about, feel free to email to us, tweet it at us, and we'll definitely consider it. And yeah, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the show. Alright, and we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 101 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a 1-year premium membership to read the entire BP Fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us a question anytime of the day and we'll get to it. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike, the pun master of Twitter, is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. Don't forget, you can email us, flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. I want to thank our sponsor, Pennant Wars, once again. For Brett Sayer, Mike Gianellis, George Bissell, saying until our next show, 2 weeks from now. So long, everybody.
See you in 2 weeks.